We're going to take a look back now on some of the big stories in world news this year as we close out a chaotic 2020. Christiane Amanpour is chief international correspondent for CNN. She also hosts Amanpour & Company on PBS, and she joins us now on Skype. Christiane, welcome back. It's always great to have you on the show.
It's wonderful to be with you, Peter.
And what a terrible year it has been for so many people around the world. How would you even start to sum it up?
Well, look, you're right. And one of the words that has become overused, but absolutely correct, is unprecedented. Certainly in our modern history, we have never faced something like this. You've had, you know, so many people put out of work, so many governments trying to make up for the economic pain, so many people also disproportionately affected who are doing perhaps the most essential work on the front lines. On the other hand, for the lucky segment of the population, which has been privileged enough to have high-speed Wi-Fi, the ability to work remotely, the ability to be flexible, you know, they have suffered less.
You may remember it was New Year's Eve 2019 when the Wuhan Municipal Health Commission in China reported a cluster of pneumonia cases, and that would prove to be the novel coronavirus that we're all familiar with now, that you just described, how terrible it's been. And I remember in the early days of the outbreak, speaking with journalists who were taking tremendous steps just to get into the city that was under strict lockdown. We were talking to people getting pulled off of cruise ships and flown back to the United States under quarantine, but we really had no idea what was coming. How do you think history will judge this huge international story that we're still in the middle of?
I believe history will judge this by the total disregard for science and fact by the most important countries that should have known better. We will always remember, and it brings sometimes, even now, tears to my eyes. I feel quite emotional when I recall what you just said. You painted a picture of what was going on at the beginning of last year, the drama, the panic, the unknown, the darkness, the what do we do to survive this? You know, do we all just hunker down forever? What's going to happen? And then, you know, you remember that there were pandemic books that were written. There were manuals that were written and not taken up, whether in the US or Britain. And yet in many countries, whether it be in Vietnam or South Korea or wherever it might be, New Zealand stands out as a massively impressive example. Governments and leaders, you know, reacted instantly and were guided by the science. Yes, we're in a very, very dangerous second and third wave in some cases right now, but it's the beginning where people will be judged.
Well, to that point, this tested world leaders around the world in ways that they had never been tested before, and some performed quite differently than others. China, of course, at the center of the outbreak. But, you know, China made other headlines this year. It took major steps to limit democratic freedoms in Hong Kong. How do you think this year will judge China and its shifting role in the world?
China has used this year as well, as you say, to crack down hard on democracy in Hong Kong, and we've been covering it. And China under Xi Jinping has become much more authoritarian, much richer, much more successful in many ways, but politically repressive. And now Hong Kong, which people thought China would never dare touch, is suffering huge consequences, huge consequences.
Another story I want to touch on is something that happened here at home and then spread around the world, and that, of course, is George Floyd, who died in police custody in Minneapolis. In France, that story became part of the country's Justice for Adama movement, referring to a man who died in police custody in 2016. I want to listen to this sound, protesters in Paris chanting his name this summer. Were you surprised how the George Floyd protest movement caught fire abroad?
No, I wasn't actually, because it was such a horrendous image. It was such a shock to humanity. It was such an affront to every aspect of decency that we in the West and in the democratic world pretend to uphold. It was such a disgrace that it is one of those massive turning point moments and game-changing moments, not just in the United States, but around the world, which also continues to grapple with its racist past, its colonial past. If you're talking about here in Europe, we've seen protests all over in Belgium, in the UK, as you mentioned, in France, all over. And I think one of the things that I've spoken many times to American civil rights leaders and all the activists, they have been and they've drawn a lot of I think, comfort and energy from seeing how their struggle is reflected and endorsed and supported and joined abroad. So I think that's massively important. We've kept our eye on it all year since the end of May, when that terrible... He was killed. He was executed. He was assassinated in front of cameras with people standing there shouting, please, he can't breathe. Leave him alone. It is unacceptable that that happened. And really, all our societies have to reckon with it. I hope 2021 will build on the momentum of 2020 and that we will have real reckonings and not just verbal testimonials. Whatever kind of reparations, truth, and reconciliation that can take place. South Africa gave us an example. It is not exactly precise an example, but we can learn from what other countries and other racist systems have done to tear down those walls of racism and to try to atone for that very, very dark and unjust past.
Yeah, and it, as all of that was happening, more traditional conflicts were happening. And I mean in the sense that long simmering tensions between Armenia and Azerbaijani forces broke out into violence in Nagorno-Karabakh. There was a civil war. There is a civil war breaking out in Ethiopia. A U.S. drone strike killed the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani back in January. Here's the sound of mourners in Tehran after that happened. So as we head into 2021, what do you think? Is the world, does it feel like a more or less stable place than where the year started?
No, it doesn't. It absolutely does not. And I would say that with the new administration coming in, many nations, adversary and ally, will be looking for a more stable, a foreign policy that hews to more of the norms that one is used to the United States leading. I think, you know, Iran, of course, started with that assassination of Qasem Soleimani, the most senior military leader, and ended with the assassination of the most senior nuclear scientist and developer. So there's been a huge amount of effort by the United States and its allies, whether it be Israel or the Gulf nations, to try to sideline and perhaps even topple the Iranian regime, perhaps even try to create regime change. So the challenge for the Biden administration is to potentially go back into that nuclear deal. Obviously, the ground has shifted a lot and it'll be difficult, but allies are really, really hoping that across the board, whether it's NATO, whether it's supporting democracy around the world, we've been reporting on the erosion of democracy, the increase of authoritarianism, even in Eastern Europe, Hungary, Poland. We've watched the fraudulent elections in Belarus. We have watched the beating up of the opposition candidate in Uganda, Uganda being a strong U.S. ally. I think 2021 will be about health, the economy, and hopefully about rebuilding democracy and guarding democracy, and also a continuation of a desperately needed racial reckoning.
Mm. I hear you. You've given a very sober look at the world for good cause, of course. It's been a terrible year. Is there any reason for hope? We have seen the Taliban in Afghanistan continue very difficult peace talks. Also, Israel and some Arab nations are taking steps to normalize diplomatic relations. Do you see any hope in those areas?
Well, I certainly think Israel and those Arab nations who have normalized, we won't call them peace accords because they were never at war. They were normalization accords, will obviously be of benefit to that part of the world. However, that has left as a casualty and a consequence the fact that the main show in that part of the world has not been addressed, and that is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That is still simmering, and unless that is resolved in a fair, just, secure, equitable way for all parties concerned, that is still going to be a thorn in the side. We have seen what you've just called a peace accord or peace deals trying to be hammered out. It's not working. The Taliban, all they want to do is see the United States retreat. They want to go back to their oppression of women. They want to go back to their very fundamentalist Islamic State, even though they say they don't. That is what we're seeing on the ground. So we need to be really careful about that. But hope for me lies in the individuals, in the incredible scientists, whether it's BioNTech, whether it's, remember, the immigrants, the people who created the first vaccine to be approved, are Turkish immigrants into Germany. I think it's an amazing story. And I think the general global scientific achievement is phenomenal. To me, that gives me massive, massive hope. And I think each and every individual who's been on the front line and on the essential workforce during this pandemic have been people who we need to really sort of get on our knees and thank, because they've been amazing. The power of the individual will, the power of individual kindness and compassion and care, I think have stood out as much as some of the dereliction of duty by the governments who refuse to take science and the like seriously.
That's Christiane Amanpour, chief international anchor of CNN's Amanpour. Thank you for taking some time to bear witness with us. What a difficult year this has been. I'm sure we'll speak to you again in 2021. Thank you.
Thank you.